listener, and welcome to the first episode of Shot Happens, a podcast about soccer and some practical advice for parents and players, and to try and figure out what this whole youth soccer travel system means. My name is Robert Hay, and I'm joined by a co-host here who will introduce himself right now. Reed, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
My name is Reed Mulpey. Probably I go by Coach Reed, so you may have seen an article or two out by me. 27 years now, nearly 30 years of actual coaching the game since I was age 16 at some of the highest levels. So I've dealt with travel soccer. Now I've sort of stepped away from the coaching role, and I help not just soccer, but all kinds of sports organizations with creating better competitive environments, better culture, communication, and helping coaches create focus on the person first and create better outcomes with their athletes.
And so you hear Coach's background here, and you're wondering, so why does this podcast exist? In the universe of so many recordings and so many podcasts that you can choose from, what makes this one different from the many other U.S. soccer podcasts that exist out there? And I'd like to say that it's because this one has a very different perspective. You heard Coach's background and the years of great knowledge that he has and has been giving back. My experience with youth soccer is all of maybe 2 months. I am a parent of a new travel soccer player. My daughter was picked for our local travel soccer team about 2 months ago, and I'm just getting into the whole experience of what is the current U.S. travel soccer backdrop. And so what we decided to do was get together and do a podcast where we talk about a lot of the issues that are affecting youth soccer and travel soccer today, and do it not from a 10,000-foot perspective, but more from an on-the-ground perspective, give some practical advice and talk to parents and players and soccer aficionados and those of interest to the game to give a perspective and talk about what is one of, if not the largest, youth participation activities in the nation right now. According to usyouthsoccer.org, over 3 million kids play for a youth soccer, U.S. youth soccer club. That's bigger than the total number of Boy Scouts and total number of Girl Scouts in the country, according to their statistics. So youth soccer is a huge business in this country. Chances are that if you're a parent, you likely have a child who's playing in youth soccer or travel soccer or know someone who is and have heard the stories. And this podcast is kind of a therapeutic way to talk about a lot of these issues that are out there and hear from two different perspectives what these issues are and how we can solve them. So Coach, what's your thoughts on youth soccer today? And before we get into our topic of the hour.
Sure. One of the things I'm really excited about is when you and I first started talking about this, the idea that somebody that's sort of in heading into the sunset with his youth soccer background and talking about issues that still exist with somebody who's heading into it, like you said. But what's really cool is there are a lot of podcasts out there that focus on the coaches and they focus on the athletes, and we have some that gloss over it with the parents. But we're talking about two people sitting down at the table, one from a coach's and administrator's perspective and one from a parent's perspective, and really digging into the issues and not just talking about things, but getting academic and talking about next steps and actions that you can take as a parent to sort of help create a better experience. And that's what I'm most excited about. So youth soccer, where are we? I talk about this almost every day. My biggest concern right now in youth soccer, and of course we talk about a lot of Changing the Game Project, is the attrition rate. We're seeing, just not just in soccer, but in all sports, about 70% of all kids are quitting the game by age 14. The biggest reason they quit is they're not having fun. In there, in that research, two other reasons why they quit is they don't like their coach and they don't like their teammates. And those two things link back to not having fun. And so that's really where I'm struggling these days, is getting people to understand that you can create a fun environment and you can create a development environment, but you don't need to focus on these outcomes that we don't have to focus on getting scholarships and winning trophies and being ranked nationally and all these other things. Those come out as a byproduct of creating the right environment for our children to grow and develop. Because when you and I played soccer, when you and I sported as kids, we didn't play it to win championships and to get scholarships and all those. We played it because we had a lot of fun. We were learning new skills and we took away these invaluable skills and values that we could use in life.
You know, it's interesting talking, you throw out that statistic about the 70% of kids quitting because of the coaches and teammates. One of the things that stood out to me my wife and I went to my daughter's parent orientation before tryouts, the club that we're a part of, we both, my wife and I noted this, they didn't bring up college until maybe halfway through the presentation. They didn't bring up, you know, the idea of professional, the players becoming professionals until about two thirds of the way through. What they started talking about was the community, why they exist, what their community function is, how they give back to the city, how they make a better person out of the players, and why the system that they play is designed, they play a specific system so that everybody can get a touch and everybody participates in the activities. And there's no the star players, the ones who are going to go play in college or are going to get a tryout at a professional academy, are the ones doing most of the work. Their goal is to get everyone involved. And then the discussion went into, well, here's why we do what we do, and here's how, if you're interested, your kid can eventually, we'll help them and support them, and here's how we do this to reach their goals. But one of the things that really struck out, and this is the reason why we joined our club, is because that wasn't the focal point. That wasn't the first selling point, was we'll help you get your kid into college, or we'll help you get a scholarship, or we'll help you try out for DC United. I'm a DC native, and we live in the DC area. So it wasn't, your kid will be trying out for DC United or the Washington Spirit. It was, you're going to have a good holistic experience with a city club, and you're going to meet new people, and you're going to form relationships with other people that are very close, because you're going to be traveling with them if you make the team. And so that's one thing that's really struck out with me. And I didn't realize that this was maybe an uncommon situation in travel soccer, that, I knew about the competitiveness and you hear the stories, but I didn't realize that it was rare that this was the kind of presentation most parents and players get. So I was very glad to hear I made a right choice, at least from that perspective, from the beginning. But you're right. Coaches and players do make a big difference when you're trying out for a team and you're doing travel sports. Can you talk a little bit more about your experience with professional coaches and tryouts? We want to get into tryouts here, because this is essentially, this first episode is our tryout for you. So, Coach, talk a little bit about professional coaches versus volunteer coaches. With my daughter's tryout, it was all professional coaches. It was the staff for the club who came out and did the tryouts and the scoring and everything like that. But you have a different experience. Can you talk about the difference between the two?
Yes. So I've done both. I've been involved in both. I've been at organizations that, several thousand kids and multiple directors of coaching and multiple locations. And you're walk into a tryout and you have 200 kids and you're trying to call it down to, the top 30 some out of those 200. And it's run exclusively by paid professionals with quote unquote licenses and experience and all of that. And I've also been at clubs where it was almost exclusively run by volunteers. And my coaches were parents. They were parents who raised their hand. They were the sucker in the room that said, I played when I was a kid. I'll coach my kids' team. And a lot of them, there was no ulterior motive. They just wanted to see their kid play. But they come into it with sort of a fresh, naive, focus. So I've been at both. And what I discovered, let me throw some numbers at you just to really put a perspective on this. When I was at larger clubs, when I would run coaching clinics, this is an opportunity. I'm going to bring somebody in, or I'm going to do a special session that's going to help coaches learn and become better coaches. And I brought in some guests sometimes at these clinics, and we had some great ones. We had a couple coaches in my hometown who were just some of the best and the best. They coached some of the best players in the world. We had a coach who was Michelle Akers' trainer trained her and worked with her during the better part of her career. And when she went and won a World Cup, and we brought him in one time to do a session, and we were at a club with several hundred coaches, and the vast majority of them somewhat paid. Almost anybody that coached or trained a team was paid, and we advertise it and we get five people there. Fast forward, and I'm at a club where I've only got 40 teams. Actually, I think we're actually 32 teams, and so I'm looking at roughly 32 coaches, and I think maybe three of them were or two of them were paid, not including me. And I hold a session, and it's just me. I'm not even bringing anybody special. I mean, it's boring old Reed. We see him every day. We're kind of sick of hearing from the guy. Like, shut up, Reed. And I had 29 coaches show up. 29 coaches show up. Here's the best part. One of the coaches who was actually paid was my former coach when I was 15 years old, and he showed up to take notes. And it's like the whole John Wooden thing. What are you doing here, man? You know, because you can always learn. And it sort of opened my eyes that we put this negative tone on volunteer coaches, and yet these are the ones that are starving to get involved. And there's no ego. There's no, you know, whatever. They're like, hey, teach me. I want to learn. I want to be involved. I want to get better at this. I want to create a better opportunity for my kid. And you know, paid coaches, you can't even get them there, and they're being paid. So, and that's not everybody's experience, but I really want to throw that out there, get people thinking. So what did I see the difference at tryouts between volunteer and paid coaches? Here's the biggest issue, the stigma behind it, and emotional baggage isn't the right word, but there's an emotional residue there. There's a personal residue there, because when you've got paid coaches, there's no connection to the kids. They're there to pick the team. They're not there to play the politics. Hopefully they're not there to boost their own child, et cetera. They're there to really evaluate the kids on an unbiased basis. And I was at the larger club, we had the ability to put people on tryouts who had no connection to the team whatsoever. So here I am choosing a team, and I've got three coaches who won't even be helping me during the season, don't even know these kids, and honestly, quote unquote, probably won't see them anymore. And they're helping advise me on what the best choice is. So it's totally unbiased. You get to the volunteers, and there is, you're evaluating your own kid in comparison to others. And one, you either under-evaluate your kid because you don't want to be seen as that parent who puts his kid on the top team, or you over-evaluate your kid, not because you're a jerk, but because you love your kid that much that you see your kid through a certain pair of glasses. And so that was the biggest issue I faced with the volunteer versus professionals, was that emotional residue there, with that personal residue that was there. And of course, that bled over onto parents watching tryouts, because they're looking at the professionals and they're thinking, okay, it's in good hands because these are professionals. And they're you come to my tryouts and you're looking at fellow parents, you're like, well, that's Joe. His kid's, you know, of course his kid's going to make the top team, and my kid's probably going to be the one on the bubble and cut. And it's not fair because it's Joe making the choice. So it creates that sort of political minefield.
Or there's Joe. I coached against his team. His team is terrible. What does he know about, you know, selecting kids? Or all his players do is shove other players around, and there's no skill, no footwork available. You know, how do I trust them to do it? And then it comes back to the club, you know, the people running the club. So it's interesting. You know, it's a very good perspective, and a very interesting perspective. Because I, you know, like you said, I felt comfortable with the professional coaches. The idea that it's like, these are people who are paid because they are soccer coaches, and they should know what they're doing. And I dealt with rec coaches, and I've been very fortunate when I've coached rec. I've coached my kid, and the coaches I've dealt with for the most part have been incredibly good, dedicated coaches. Even when they didn't know what they were doing, they tried, and they wanted everybody to have fun. So you would think that if I saw some of them on the field, I would feel comfortable. It's like, hey, you know, I coached against him, and his team was really good, but you're right, it's that bias. It's like, but his daughter is out there too. And, you know, if she makes the top team and my daughter doesn't, then, you know, how much bias plays into that. So it's a very interesting perspective, but it's good to know that if you see volunteer or rec coaches out there doing tryouts, it's not necessarily you should pull the kid and go, you know, two counties over or try a different club that has everybody wearing the shirts. It's a good thing to know, because, like I said, I had that bias going in with the professional coaches.
Yeah, and what you need to understand is instead of panicking right away, dig into it, understand a little bit more about the volunteers. You should have done your homework on that particular club and talked to board members, and you know, there's got to be one paid leader in the club, or one kind of director of coaching. There's somebody who's in a role that they can give you an unbiased opinion. Ask other people, ask parents who've played against them, who played for them. Talk to, you know, you have to seek your own advice outside of that and give them a chance. But here's the thing. I had a lot more conversations around parents who felt personally cheated when it was a volunteer coach situation than when I was at the professional coached club. The professional coach club, we got into completely different politics, of course. But yeah, I mean, that's the people immediately want to jump to, well, my kid got cut because it's personal, or my kid didn't make the team because that's so-and-so, and you know, those things are, he's an awful coach. why is he the one choosing? And one of the ways we got around it was we actually hired in Objective. We went to Challenger and said, we'll pay your coaches who are well respected in the community to come in and be our evaluators. And they're actually going to do the evaluations. And then they're going to collect all the data. We had a piece of software that we had created in-house, or a little app made in Excel, where we tabulated all the data that we collected at the tryouts, ranked by not only the volunteer coaches, but these paid professionals who came in and who were third-party objective observers. And then they tabulated. And then those third-party observers are the ones who drove sort of the, here's where the players are, here's what you should consider, here's how you do it. And then the volunteer coaches sort of take their lead from them unless they were very comfortable with it. So we got around it a little bit that way. But as far as professional coaches, I do have to point this out because it's one of the things I beat with a hammer a lot publicly. Just because they have a license, just because they have a background, let's not go blindly into this and say, oh, you know, you wouldn't take your kid to a pediatrician and the guy says, oh, I got, you know, I'm a doctor. I've got the letters DR there, you know, in front of my name, or I've got MD behind my name. So, you know, you should trust me. You're still going to do your homework. And yet people go, oh, well, he used to play the game, so he must be really good at coaching. Or he's got an A license, so he's the best. You know what? I drive on the road. I'm in California, okay, and there's a lot of interesting drivers out here. It's very fast-paced. I drive on the road every day with people who I'm like, they gave that person a license. That person has a license, but that person does not know how to drive. So you've got to take licenses, and even in sports, with a grain of salt here, folks.
Yeah, and the way that they changed the licensing for coaching, with the new F license being completely online, I'm an F license coach, you know, insert joke here. And if anybody who's local hears this podcast, they probably are. But, you know, I signed up, you know, created an account at US Soccer, and I said, you know, I'm gonna do this one day when I have a couple hours. And during like a January, we had a tremendous snowstorm. Everything was closed one day, you know, like work off, school closed, and everything like that. And I said, well, no better time than the present. And I sat my daughter down with me, and we went through 3 hours of videos on the US Soccer website. And to the end of those 3 hours, I had passed the little exams at the end of every video, and I had a license. So on one hand, it's good because I was able to improve my practices. I was able to improve my coaching approach, and it benefited the players. But on the other hand, it was incredibly easy to become a licensed coach. So your point's a good one. Just because you have someone out there who has a license, who has a, you know, a tablet or a piece of paper in their hand, the research beforehand is very important. So, you know, kind of know what the philosophy is as to why these people are on the field, and you know, what the club is looking for when they're bringing these people in. So that's a good point. It's so easy to default, I think, to what your local club is. But I guess increasingly there are so many clubs and so many options out there that you can be an active consumer and go around and talk to people and do some interviews. So
sure. I mean, if it were me personally and I'm looking at a club for my kids to play, and having gone through what I've gone through, and I'm reviewing clubs, if I see a club that's bragging about results first, I'm going to pause, because I get it. We're very results oriented. They got to somehow put themselves ahead of everybody else around them. But that creates a focus within the club in general, because that creates an expectation. And so now, not just the club itself, but anybody trying out for that club, their kids are there because they had 85 kids get college scholarships last year because they won, you know, 18 state championships or whatever the number is. People are gravitating there for that result, and that sets an expectation, which is unrealistic, and it's creating a high pressure situation before the kids ever step foot on field. What I look at is, okay, where's your value statement? Where's your mission? Okay, then are they living that mission or value statement, or is that just words on a page? And that's easy to do. You go and you watch them. You watch them when nobody's looking. You go and you watch them coach when they're not playing your teams, when they don't even know you're watching, and you see how their coaches behave, how they interact with the kids, how the kids interact with each other, how the parents interact, how the parents treat the referee, how the parents – are they living the values? When I was at that club of almost all volunteer coaches, the Star Soccer Club in Cincinnati, Ohio, Star was living its values to the point where I was getting texts from friends of mine who said, you know, I came and watched your team. Just as a curiosity, I watched your such and such team. I think I want to be a part of your club now, because – They were living the values. The way they interacted with the parents, the way they interacted with the kids, the way the coaches interacted, you know, things like that. Start getting those messages, then we know we're on the right track. And so that's what I would look for: is, are they living it? Are the coaches background checked? I don't care if they have a license. Are they background checked? Can they work with children? You know, it's, again, for as great as some of our coaches are at the highest levels, I'm pretty certain some of our high-level, high-performance coaches can't work with five-year-olds. They know that. They know where their wheelhouse is. They're staying in their lane. And so just because somebody has coached at college and now they're working at a club, well, make sure they can work with 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds. Make sure they communicate in their language and they can get down to their eye level and they can understand and have empathy for where that child is on the development, you know, on the development timeline. So look at those things, review those things rather than, oh, it's a professional coach. That's great. What does that coach's philosophy look like? How does that coach interact with the players? What kind of culture does the team have? What kind of communication patterns do they have? What kind of culture does the club have? What are the values there? Is this a really good fit for my child? Whether that coach is getting results and whether that coach is licensed and a former pro player or whatever, is it still a good fit?
Yeah, one thing that would impress me about my local club is when my son was playing tot soccer, you know, the this is a soccer ball, sit on your soccer ball, that kind of soccer.
My favorite kind.
Yeah, it's oh, that's when it's fun. and the least or most stressful, depending. But the one of the coaches that was doing it is also a local high school coach. And she brought her team to the brink of a conference championship. And she was sitting there going through with the kids, like you said, speaking in their language, you know, relating to their level. And this is a woman who just, you know, the weekend before was leading 18-year-olds to the brink of a championship. And it's like that was impressive to me. It's like you can bring in people who can do these things and relate to kids at different levels. So I think the point we're hammering home is just like anything else in life, research, do your homework. You know, if you have preconceived notions, make sure that your preconceived notions are backed up by facts. I mean, people, we all talk about the expense of soccer these days, especially travel soccer and academy soccer. Just like any other expense, if you're not doing your research when you're investing or you're buying into it, then you are setting yourself up for trouble. So I think that's probably the best piece of advice is just do your homework in advance. And I mean, start thinking about this as soon as possible and start looking around. And just because it has a fancy name doesn't mean it's the best out there or has the fancy coach's name. It's the best out there. So,
yeah, I mean, here's an interesting thought. I tell you, give me $50,000, right? And in 10 years, I'm going to get you a return on investment of, let's say, 3%.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at that, okay? Are you going to invest with me when your total return over over those 10 years is 3%?
Well, I'm going to certainly check and see if I can get 5% somewhere else.
I was going to say, I mean, I think some bank accounts, some money market funds, because here's the thing, and it's not a great correlation, but that's your percentage of getting a college scholarship, and that's actually starting at freshman year. All mm-hmm. the freshmen right now, only about 3% of them are going to get a college scholarship. So you're going to invest a couple $1,000 a year over a decade with your club for the hopes of what? Because you saw on their website that they got a bunch of kids scholarships. Well, guess what? One, it's about 3% of them. Two, nobody gets full scholarships anymore. Coaches love those kids who come into college and it's like, hey, you've got great academics and you were in theater. Good. I can get you other scholarships. We could package this and create a nice bundle for you, you know? And so that's the problem is if you're choosing your club based on that shiny object, keep in mind, you're better off putting that money in a, you know, in one of the college plans and taking your kid somewhere else. And because not just the college piece, but here's the thing. I bought into this. I coached teams. I went for state cups. I did all this and I talked to parents about those state cups. And you know what? I've got kids. I could probably reach out to them now and ask them where their state cup medal is. And they're going to say, I don't know, coach. It's packed away somewhere. You know, it's rusty. It's dusty. I don't know. We sold it at a yard sale. But what they do remember are the memories we created, are the valuable lessons they learned, are things that were said to them that altered their life in some positive way by either a teammate, by one of the coaches, by a parent, something, and the situations that strengthen them as human beings. And that's where the investment is, and that's what I keep wanting to hammer home, is do your homework so your kid's in an environment where your kid becomes a better human being once the game stops. Because if you're choosing your coach based on a license or you're choosing where your kid plays based on outcomes, you're looking for the short game. You're missing the whole long game.
Yeah, and at this point, if you're still thinking, you know, my kid is destined for stardom and to be, you know, the next Christian Pulisic, maybe, but let's all be honest and say that those options are, that's a very narrow path, and that probably shouldn't be your first that shouldn't be the top reason why you choose a club. So
no.
Move to Germany. That might be your best bet. Not that that's not a terrible thing to do. It's a beautiful country, but
it is. So let me jump to stress real quickly about this, because we're talking about tryouts and I got a little bit off topic just because this is something that really matters to me because of how we choose our people who are around our kids. But let's jump to the stress at tryouts, right?
Yeah.
Tryouts are stressful, right?
Oh my gosh. It is incredibly stressful. It might be the most stressful thing to do in the whole soccer year.
Yes. And it's not just stressful for you as a parent. It's stressful for us as administrators. It's stressful for coaches. This is the time of year, like when May comes around. This May, I actually went one day to the beach with my family and sat on the beach just so I could say, I should be at soccer field doing tryouts, and I'm not. So here's the thing. It's stressful for everybody, but it's all of us adults that are creating the stress, because our kids, they would have never known it was stressful until we imposed our adult feelings and expectations on them. And so when we're shopping around for clubs, we have to keep in mind that if we're telling little Johnny, oh, I'm taking you to this club because it's the best coaches and you have the best chance of getting a scholarship, boom, huge expectation, 500-pound gorilla just sat down on Johnny's left shoulder. And then you tell Johnny, you know, I really need you to make the A team here, Johnny, because this is a huge investment for us. I mean, we got to do this right. It's going to cost us thousands of dollars and a lot of driving. We're driving 45 minutes from home every night. So, Johnny, make sure you give your vet, boom, 500-pound gorilla on Johnny's right shoulder now. So my best advice for parents going into trials, and you probably felt this, the stress starts to build up on you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let your children see your stress and do not push it on to them. Let it go, because this is their experience. This is their time. This is their tryout. This is their love of the game. Don't strip that from them by you putting adult expectations on them or by you voicing your stress. You have every right to be stressed as a parent. We should stress every day about the livelihood and the health and the happiness and the safety of our children. But there is no need for us to turn around and lump that pile of stress on top of that.
Yeah, the funny thing is I could remember the exact moment where I did that to my my little soccer player. We were she did the pre-travel program, and it was about tryout time, you know, a couple weeks away, and we had talked to her, my wife and I had talked to her about travel tryouts, and I said, well, we went through the whole thing, you know, do you want to try out for this team? Yes. Well, you might not make it. Okay, that's fine. Do you want to try it anyway? Yeah, this sounds cool. I really want to do this. And we were coming home from the practice a few weeks after that conversation, and she just asked a question about, you know, well, what happens if I don't make the team? And I said, well, you don't make the team, that's fine. You can still play soccer. And she's like, okay. And I was like, but you need to, you know, this is a player who's played, you know, rec soccer for most of her life, and it's been fun. I was like, but you need to go out there and try your best. You know, you can't just not try. You have to try. And then I saw on her face, she said, I really hope I make the team. And it's like, oh, great. You know, like it's a fine line to walk as a parent between the whole idea of pushing, you know, talking to your kids about this is something that you need to take seriously because it is, you know, it is serious, but it's also fun at the same time. You know, you're going into a program where your team will get dropped from a league, or you're going to get dropped from playing time. You're not going to get playing time if you don't try your hardest and you don't listen to your coach. Whereas with rec, it's, you know, you don't listen to the coach, whatever, you're still probably going to get equal minutes to the other kids. So it's a fine line to walk between that idea of you need to perform, but you need to have fun. And how to emphasize both of those at the same time, for at least for a new parent, was a tough learning experience, and I'm still learning how to do that.
It is, and I'm kind of relieved that my boys, their passion for soccer got turned into other passions, and I'm only relieved because I was that dad too for years. I resisted putting them in soccer. I mean, you can't help it, and it's my wife's like, why aren't Julia and the boys playing soccer? Julia, she tried, and she was like, it's not my cup of tea. I was like, oh. Thank goodness, I'm relieved. And then she's like, well, why aren't the boys playing soccer? I mean, you're running this club and your kids should probably be playing. I mean, you know, and then they may want to follow in your footsteps. And I'm like, all right, okay. But then the moment that happens, they're hearing me. They're hearing me talking about tryouts and ranking players and evaluations and best coaches and best practices. I mean, they're in the car with me all the time, and all these kitchen counter conversations and car dashboard conversations. They're there, you know, little pitchers, you know, big ears. Or however the saying goes, and they picked up everything, and it's all of a sudden my two kids are absolute nervous wrecks. I mean, they're popping Alka-Seltzer before training sessions and tryouts because the ulcers are everywhere. And I'm like, what's wrong with you, kiddo? It was my fault. I couldn't help it. So it's like, how can I become the de-stressor and not the re-stressor? Because see, they go out on the field, And before the field, they're stressed, and then they get on the field and everything's fine and they feel great. They're with their buddies and they're enjoying stuff, and they come off, and then I re-stress them by talking about this stuff, right? So how do I become the de-stressor? And it's like, well, John talks about the car ride home. I just didn't talk about anything with them. Mm. I'd actually send them home with my wife, and I'd stay and clean up the fields and sweep the sheds and all that stuff, and then I'd come home. If I did talk, it's, you said it exactly earlier. Did you have fun? That's it. That's it. Did you have fun? Oh, I had a blast. Who was your evaluator this time around? Oh, so-and-so. Did you learn anything? Oh, yeah. He taught us. Oh, yeah. Tell me more about that. And it's just, we're going from there. We're going from there. You know, I'm not going to evaluate or have my kid evaluate his own tryout. Here's the hardest thing. Here's the easiest thing for me, the hardest thing for you, Rob. I was running the tryouts, so I couldn't watch my kids. And it was the greatest relief on the planet, because the moment I watch my kids, two things are happening. One, I'm judging, and I can't help but do it. And that's where the politics come in, and that's where the stress comes in, right? And two, they know I'm watching. And, you know, the whole psychological study of people are different when they know they're being watched. Well, when your kids know you're watching them in a high-stress, high-pressure situation where they got to make the team, everything changes. And I used to tell parents, oh, my kid had a horrible day one, and what could I do? I said, don't watch. And let them know you're not watching, because your child may have actually had a performance anxiety issue with you watching. Just think about that.
Yeah, our club said, don't stay. I mean, they said, you know, go out to dinner, your kid will be fine, and come back and pick them up in an hour, hour and a half. It was a 3-day tryout. And we pretty much everybody stayed, in part because it wasn't enough time to actually go out and go somewhere and then come back. But the other thing is, it's just everybody else was there. And so, you know, it's like, oh, we'll stay and watch and see what this is all about. I mean, being new to the process, a lot of the parents were like us. And it's like, you know, what exactly is this entail? And let's observe. I tried to stay out of it by I took my son with us, and we grabbed the football from the back of the car and we tossed it around. And eventually a bunch of other kids who were bored watching tryouts came, and we were playing, you know, pretending we were Peyton Manning, just tossing the football around for a bit. And I was, you know, watching some of the other parents and watching them intently talking to their kids and things like that. It's just, I could feel for the administrators at that point, because as apparently, like we said, we were stressed. Everybody was uptight about that. But to have that, you know, go to the kids and the administrators and the coaches must have been very tough. Thankfully, you know, we had some experience, guys out there. It was all guys. Experienced guys out there to do the evaluation. And I think they were able to at least outwardly handle it well. But, I think that when this happens, you know, next year, you know, if she does tryouts at the next level, I probably might just drop her off and say, you know, as long as the club's okay with it, just drop her off and go to dinner, because there really was no reason for me to be there. She was fine on her own, and me being there, it was an interesting learning experience for me, and I got to say hi to some friends, but otherwise she was okay on her own. So I would probably just leave her and come pick her up, and then she would do what you did, to chat with her in the car and say, what was the fun part of practice? So probably more clubs should do that. I'm sure all of them do, but as parents, we probably should just walk away or maybe watch from the bushes or something for the first day and then leave after that. But
I love it. You know what? You know what made me think of? I love it. And I hope people take what you just said to heart, because here's something cool. Clubs should advertise, instead of tryouts, free date nights.
Oh, heck yeah.
Clubs should advertise free babysitting. It's date night. It's mom and dad's night out. Drop your kids off at the fields for a couple hours. We'll take care of them. And when you come back, we'll give them back to you. And you know what? They'll probably end up on a team when all's said and done.
And tired that night.
Yeah, and tired. And they'll sleep for you. I mean, this is like a parent's dream. You get somebody to watch your kids. There's no ramification. There's no strings attached to that person watching your kids for an hour or two. You get to go out on a date night without kids. And then, like you said, they're tired and they go to bed right away. You're like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest babysitting gig ever. Parents night out. The other thing that clubs, and we actually tried to do this at Star, and I hope they did it. I hope they ended up doing it. But we talked about after the last round of tryouts and the level of stress and everything. The level of stress actually came from the logistics. We were really struggling with the logistics, getting everybody checked in, getting the parent meetings done, and getting the kids on the field and all that, and then the next round of kids. And if there was lightning and we had a delay, and everything was pushed back, and now the administrators and coaches and evaluators and parents and kids, everybody's stressed. And it's like hanging in the air like a dense fog. And so we said, you know what? Let's just do a big cookout. Let's get a cookout. Let's hang out with the parents. The parents get to know each other. The kids go out and train. And think about this now. you have to spend the next 10 to 12 weeks with these people when a team is chosen. Wouldn't it be cool if you got to know the people you're going to be sharing a sideline with and possibly carpooling with and going out to meals with and traveling with? Wouldn't it be cool to get to know them ahead of time and really get to start to form that parent culture by doing some kind of big cookout or picnic while the kids are out there making teams? Just a thought. But then, and here's the thing, during that picnic, you as a parent, Robert, you might figure out, I really don't like these people. They're not my cup of tea, right? And then you figure out a nice way to bow out with your kid and say, this isn't a good fit for us, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But now you get to know, because how many times for people out there listening who've done it a few more times, how many times have you put your kid on a team for all the right reasons, and then you end up, this is not a good fit for us as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And you're stuck with these people, and they're stuck with you.
Yeah.
So just a thought. Do parents' night out or do a barbecue so the parents all get to know each other.
I think that's a great idea. I would have loved to have had that happen. I mean, like I said, we just did an impromptu, like, toss the football around thing, and it was helpful for some of the people there. But, yeah, you just got to – I think that's one thing that clubs can think about is just stop thinking about the game for a few minutes and start thinking about some of the other things going on. Separate the two. Like, have the kids try out, but then figure out a way to either get the parents away or get them – you know, involved or social, because you're right. It's hard to get to know some of these other parents. And let's be honest, a lot of times we're sizing each other up and going, your kid, I don't know, your kid's as good as mine. But if you have a nice little icebreaker there, it probably makes everything a little bit better. So, all right. So your child has gone through the tryouts, whether it's probably it'll be multiple days of tryouts, you know, hours of going through drills and playing games, small side matches and things like that. Should you go talk to the coaches that are doing the tryouts? I mean, in my case, I knew some of the coaches. I could have gone up and chatted with them. You know, the club administrator was there. I could have gone up and talked with him. I didn't. I figured that they were tired and didn't want to hear from another parent. So I just kind of gave a wave as I was leaving or whatever. But I mean, is there any use to going up and talking to these coaches at any point during these tryouts and just saying, hey, what's my kid got to do better?
So, first, my piece of advice is wait till everything shakes out. Especially if you're dealing with volunteer coaches who are going through the trial process. Worst thing you can do is talk to them mid-tryout. One, it never goes well because they see you coming and it's the uh-oh, and so it sets a tone. Or you read something wrong in their body language and now you're upset, and that sets the tone for the kid for the next couple of days of tryouts. Or other people see you talking and it's, oh, look, Reed's playing the politics and talking to the coach. So I leave it be during tryouts. And actually, we advise our parents, let the process play it out. Two, let me give you the advice on the best way to create the exact worst relationship with your coaches. Call them 47 times in a day. Text them nonstop at night. Wait in the parking lot by their car when they're coming out to their car. Hang around the corner. I'm not kidding you. Hang around the corner of the storage shed where the bathroom is and ambush him when he comes around to use the restroom.
Oh, no.
That happened to me.
No.
I was actually the club executive director, and it was, I just need 5 minutes. I just need to talk to you for 5 minutes. I'm like, are you kidding? Or storm out on the field in the middle of another tryout to demand to talk to them. That's the absolute best way to create an awful relationship. And I just bring that up because this happens. I get it. We're stressed, and stress makes us do crazy things. But take a breath. Take a step back. Yes. The answer to your question as far as seeking feedback is yes. And a lot of clubs are now at that point where they do give good feedback. The thing that's easiest for us to do is just post the rosters, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem is that's so awful because we've given no context, no feedback. These 36 kids made these three teams. The rest of you can go bounce, and sucks to be you is how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
And one, I have a real issue with that because – I'll get to that later. Remind me to talk about the Finland story, but I have a real issue with, we cut hundreds of kids to keep a few, and I think there's a better way. But two, we didn't give them anything to take away from it. We didn't give them any feedback. You got the, I'm sorry you didn't make it, you're rejected email, you know, and I was part of that. The club we were at, that's what we did. We made the teams, and then it sent out automatic emails through the software. And it's like, gosh, but we didn't tell these people anything. If you don't get anything, respectfully request it. And there's a respectful way to do it. Don't attack. Don't bring up other kids' names. Well, Johnny made it and he sucked. We don't want to hear that. But there is a way to say, hey, just curious, what were my kids' strengths? What looked good? What can my kid continue to develop and say, this is really good? What are some things that my child maybe can work on? and how? Can you give me some advice? What can my child work on? And how was my kid as a person? Were they respectful? Were they good teammates? Were they this? Were there some good values there? And just couch it in, all I want to know is I want to create the best experience for my child. And so if there's something that's coming from my child that's hampering that experience, we want to correct course. We want to know, you know, how is my child doing? Because sometimes a coach will say, here's the deal. Your kid was on the bubble, really close, but didn't, you know, whatever the reason is. And it's like, oh, we can work on that. Or I totally get that. Or, but, you know, you do want to seek feedback, because the worst thing we can do is cut kids and not give them anything to work on. It's like, what are we doing here? This is youth sports. This is about development. We use that darn word development all the time. But every kid you cut, you gave them nothing to develop, nothing to work on. How is that fair to them? And when I say this, Robert, I'm guilty of that. I once selected a team of what I felt were the very best kids in the entire tri-state area of Cincinnati, Ohio, and cut all the other kids. And I don't recall telling all the other kids, all 100 and something of them, this is what you can work on. This is what, you know, this is what you did really well. This is what you can work on. This is what I didn't do that. And so those kids went away not knowing. And what worse, they hated me and they hated the club and they hated the kids that made the team. Mm-hmm. Guess what? They're probably going to end up playing high school together or things like that, you know, cross paths again. It's so much easier to give feedback and let people grow into that. Because why are we doing this if we're not helping children grow?
Yeah, I think that's something that all clubs probably would need to work on if you put them on a true serum is the feedback, is the ability to give better feedback, more timely feedback. I mean, that's something I think all of us professionally have too. I mean, when you think back about our employees or, you know, the people we work with or our customers or clients or whatever, it's like feedback. It's a hard thing to do. I mean, in any aspect of life. And, it's especially hard when you've got tryouts backed up, you know, within a 2 month span and you're, you know, bringing players in, taking them out and everything else. You just don't feel like there's a time and you feel like it's something you can relegate. But, I think you're right. It's so useful to get feedback in a productive way. And I think sometimes clubs set themselves up for what's going on here? And parents demanding answers if you don't create this culture of openness and this culture of honesty. And it's hard to do, but it's I think it pays off in the long run. So,
heck yeah. You know, one of the best coaches I've ever had for as far as feedback in the last couple of decades, John O'Sullivan. Believe it or not, because I'm not even coaching for him. I don't even work for him as a coach, quote unquote. I went through my career and I was either told, gosh, you're the greatest, Reed. This is awesome. Keep doing what you do. Or I was told, you know, I just don't agree with the way you train your players, the way you play, because I'm different. I do it my way. And I'm, you know, because I'm special or whatever. And I was like, okay, that doesn't help me, you know. And then when I got into writing and speaking, nobody wants to tell you what you're doing right or wrong. It's like, hey, how's this article?
Oh, it's great. Good job. Yeah.
You know, and then somebody trolls you and is like, this is drivel. Why'd you write this? Well, everybody told me it was good. You know, and nobody wants to speak out against you. It's, you know, my daughter jokes, you know, about like some of my talks. She's like, yeah, nobody's giving you a thumbs down when you're talking. Cause you know, it's like, they're not going to be like, hey, you suck. You know? But John is such a good coach. He understands that feedback loop that when I started writing for him, it was like, I'm a first draft guy. I write it, I publish it, and if it's got issues, I correct it as I go. But if you don't like what I wrote, I don't care. I didn't really write it to be recognized. I wrote it because it was what was coming out of my fingertips and through my brain, you know? And John, when I started writing for him, he would send back, hey, fix this, hey, do this, hey, cut this, hey, do this, hey, think about this, hey, remember, think about this. This is what we really want to do. You really want to hone your voice. You really want to this. And the first couple times, I'm like, dude, you're killing me. I mean, you're just crushing my hope, you know, because it's like, I thought I was a great writer. You know what? I'm a far better writer. I'm far more polished, and I feel like I'm far more confident because his feedback was always positive. It was always focused on making me better at what I did. It was always focused on this long term, and it helped me grow. And just the other day, we published that article on the Google it on the five qualities of great teams, and I had a different opening. And he writes me, and he goes, "Reed," and again, he's a feedback guy. And usually, it's like, "Hey, we can do this. We can do this." It's always really positive. I tell you, I cherish when he gives me feedback because it's that good. And he comes back and he goes, this is a really good article. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is great. I got first draft, you know? And he's like, but let's fix this and see how this looks. And let's rearrange these two pieces and see how that sounds. I go and I fix it and I go, John, I think this is one of my all-time favorite articles that I've written. That's feedback. imagine that, and John was a former coach. Imagine having him as a coach. Imagine having him as a director of coaching, as the executive director of club, and everybody within his club is doing exactly that. Imagine if we're doing that for our kids. If he can do it with me, and I'm an old dog, new tricks, you know, set in my ways, pretty cocky about my abilities, and I still listened. Imagine what a guy like him could accomplish with 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. We can do that with our kids. We can give them feedback, even at trials. That makes them better people and better athletes.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. I 100% agree with that, and that's lacking in this world sometimes. So, all right, we've been dancing around this. Let's talk about the big moment, the two sides of the coin. Your kid makes the club. You get the notice saying, you know, inviting you to join the club or a certain team. We talked about doing your homework. At this point, if you haven't already done the research, if you haven't talked to parents, if you haven't talked to administrators, if you haven't talked to whoever that knows about the club, and you feel pretty confident about what your opinion is of the club, you're probably you got a lot of makeup to do, because I'm sure they're not giving you 3 months to make a decision. But you've probably already done your homework. So is it a slam dunk that you're going ahead and joining this club? I mean, the emotional release, unless you're at a, you know, your kid makes a tier you didn't expect. My assumption is your emotional release is, oh, thank goodness they made the team. Yeah, here's the first, you know, few $100 check. What are some things that parents should be thinking about when they get that notice saying, congratulations, you've been asked to join XYZ team?
So here's an interesting thing. When the coach calls, do they ask for you, or do they ask your permission to talk to the athlete and offer to the athlete?
Oh, we got an email. There was no phone call. Yep.
And unfortunately, when I was at Star, it was the easiest way to do it and everything. But that's one of the things I look at is, and if you get an email, that's fine. I'm not knocking that, because, like I said, we did it at Star, and I love that club. I love that club. But I do know that there were a lot of those volunteer parent coaches who were making phone calls prior to the actual email coming out saying, hey, listen. And a lot of them asked to talk to the player. Mm-hmm. Even at the youngest ages, that was something I learned very early on from one of my mentors. I think it was Paul Rockwood that taught me it. I would call, especially when I was selecting the high-level teams, like the regional league teams and the national league teams and the state, you know, those groups. Even at 11, 12, 13 years old, I'm calling those parents and saying, hey, this is Coach Reed. Here's the deal. May I speak to Samuel, please? Yeah, hey, Samuel, I wanted to extend an official offer to you. Do not give me an answer right now. I want you to think about it. I want you to really make the right decision for you, but I want you to know you got a place on my team. And then I open the door for it, and you as a parent, Robert, the door should be open for you to say, give me some time. If you've got a club that's saying, I need an answer by 8 p.m., and you're trying out for multiple clubs, pause. I mean, you shouldn't be forced into making a decision, man. That's the old bait. That's the old move that real estate, jokingly, when I was a kid, real estate agents, you know, they would be like, oh, there's three other offers, so you got to make a decision right now on the threshold of the house. No, I don't. I mean, if this isn't the right house, my wife and I, when we were looking for houses in Florida, we got that a couple times, and my wife looked at me finally and said, listen, if this isn't the house we're meant to be in, it's just not going to happen. So yeah. I don't care if we make an offer tonight or tomorrow, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Same thing with your kid, you know? I mean, so take a time and sit down with the family. Ask your child, you know, hey, you got the offer. Is this where you want to be? How do you feel around the other kids, around the coach? Because the kid may say, you may go, yes, we're in. This is great. I'm excited. And the kid's like, all right, I'll go. But I actually really hated the coach. I mean, you just never know, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
My kids made a team one time at a club, and we were excited because I didn't think the kid was going to make the team. And I still to this day feel like I was done a favor because I was the director coach, and it really bothered me, because it's like, don't put my kid on a team he doesn't belong on, because that's not going to be beneficial to him at all. You know, I can deal with it. Mm-hmm. But if you do that to him, you set expectations, and he's going to get even more crushed. That's like when a kid can't read after kindergarten, and you're pretty certain they should probably stay in kindergarten, and you pass them anyway. The next year is really difficult on them, you know?
Yeah.
And anyway, he didn't like the coach. Hmm. He didn't like the coach. And he knew it after trials. He's like, when he found out who his coach was, he was like, he didn't say anything because we said yes and all that. And dad works at the club, and he didn't like the coach. Now, granted, most of the kids did, and I ended up replacing that coach midway through the season and taking over. But here's the thing. my kid was just going to do what I said because daddy knows best. He didn't like the coach. So think that through. Let your child have a say. Let the rest of the family have a say. Because it's got to be a family to say, you know this, travel soccer, man, it's a commitment, not just for that kid, not just for the one parent. It's a commitment for everybody.
Yeah, that's a very good point, is to sit down and talk about it with everybody. Because my wife and I were, we got the email, my wife and I chatted about it. Actually, I was out on the road, and I called her and said, well, what are we going to do about this? She said, well, the three of us need to talk about it. And, you know, my daughter's response was, well, of course. Yeah, I want to play. I was like, oh, okay. That's great. And she was very excited. So, yeah, you're right. It's getting the family together and talking about it, or the people who are involved and talk about it is very important. But what about the other side of the coin? You get the notice that says, you know, close but not quite, or didn't make the travel team in this club. Are you calling up the other clubs in the area? Are you calling up the club that turned you down? What's the next step?
Well, first off is don't show emotion. Do not show emotion, because the children will feed off of our emotions.
So any emotion, nothing at all.
I mean, I just would be, so I would empathize with your child, but I would actually feed off your child instead of the opposite. Because what we tend to do in these situations is we jump all over our you know, we emotionally jump into the picture and we tell our child how to behave. We show our child how to behave with how we behave. We throw things and we scream, that's a bunch of bunk, my kid deserved to be on that team, da, da, da. And they immediately, that's their emotion, that's their feelings. They proxy for us, okay? So we've got to stay even keel. You want to empathize with your child. You want to validate your child's feelings. You want to console your child if that's what they need. But you just want to, you want your child to sit with it. You know, like if the kid especially gets the call, or if you get the email and you show it to your child, let your child react before you do. Hey, Susie, I've got an email to show you. I want you to see this or read it to your child. And then you just sit. You're stoic, and you let your child react to that. And then you base your reactions to your child. So if your child starts crying, and that's when you can console and empathize with your child. If your child's like, eh, no big deal, then because you didn't make it a big deal, it's not a big deal. If your child goes, ah, it's okay, I didn't really want to play for that team anyway, then you didn't create an emotional situation where you're like, oh my goodness. You know, it's like, because your child would feel outraged if you felt outraged. But if your child's not outraged, there's no need for you to feel outraged. And then you really have to focus next on getting your child to an emotional stable ground if it was a blow. That's the focus. It's not the focus on seeking justice, on making right what was done wrong, and all of that. I was recently going through one of his old articles from a couple years ago, and he talks about the parent who called the lacrosse club to complain because the child was put on the B team, and that's a travesty because that child is a Division I prospect. And then later in the article, he reveals that child was 9 years old. 9 years old and was a Division I prospect. So don't do that stuff, because that doesn't create the emotional. Give your child that ability to find stable ground. Console your child, empathize with your child, figure out, you know, where your child is, and then find a way to say, okay, let's make this right. It's not flying off the handle, screaming at the club and all that. That doesn't make it right. Where do we go from here? Yes, you can reach out to that club and you can say, hey, my kid didn't make the team, and that's great. Do you have any connections at other clubs? Do you have any suggestions where we go now? That was really where, for me as an executive director of the club, and even as a coach myself, that was really where my heart mended. When I cut a kid, when the parents came back and said, what do we do next? I'm not angry. Where do we go? I felt like I can still help your child. I'm going to make a special call for you. I'm going to call such and such club. Or here's the local SAY organization or AYSO organization. Please go to them and I will recommend. And we did that. There were a couple clubs where we were really tight with each other, and we traded players back and forth constantly. Instead of collecting players and holding them as ours,
they're mine. These are mine. You can't have them.
We would say to each other, hey, I've got an extra kid. Great kid. I just didn't have a space and I feel awful that I can't take this kid. Do you have room? And we start helping. And now for me, I've mended that situation. For you, you found a solution without it being a big deal, and your child hasn't emotionally erupted over this because it's all been smoothed over. There's a silver lining in everything. There's a silver lining in everything, and I know that sounds really, you know, motivational speakerish, but find that silver lining. For my wife and I, my wife came up with this brilliant concept of the balanced activity diet. And so my one kid was cut 1 year from a sport. My wife said, that's okay. hey, we need to balance your activities. You need to have a balanced activity diet. Your activities that you do in life should cover your emotional, social, intellectual, spiritual, physical, and psychological needs, right? So this sport would have covered a couple of those. But what if you did Civil Air Patrol? Because that's going to actually cover quite a few. That's going to cover your physical. It's going to cover your emotional. It's going to cover your social. They do physics stuff at, you know, how planes fly and all that. So it's going to cover your intellectual. This is really cool. How about we do this? And then she said, okay, so what's not being covered by this is X. So let's go find an activity that does that. So my sons are in multiple activities based on that balanced activity diet. And here's the thing. We just redirected him. We redirected his emotional displeasure or his letdown into, hey, here's the silver lining. Let's go do this activity. And so my son's now done 5 flights. He's flown a plane 5 different times with, you know, obviously somebody else in the cockpit through Civil Air Patrol. He's forgotten all about the other experiences he's had.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good way to, there's something else that'll cover what that need is, and it might not be the travel soccer experience. You promised us a Finland story. We've been waiting on eggshells.
I love the anticipation. You get people into it. Now, obviously, everybody's listened to the end of the podcast and be like, this podcast, I don't want to listen to that Reed guy. I want to listen to Robert, and he just keeps talking. But I'm going to stay to the end to hear this Finland story.
This is how podcasting works. I'm pulling back the curtain.
Hook right there. Stay tuned for it. So here's the Finland story. USA Hockey years ago realized they had this huge attrition rate and they were trying to fix things. So they started studying other models. They started looking at long-term athletic development and they started talking to other countries who had really dialed in. And here's Finland, this little teeny country that's got like the population of, I don't know, whatever, Rhode Island or something. Mm-hmm. And they're dominating the world in hockey, right? And it's like, here's the USA, which we got our pick of the litter just like we do in basketball. And how are we not, you know, doing as well as Finland? And so they went over to Finland and they studied their model and they went around and looked at training sessions and they talked to the lowest, the grassroots level all the way up through the professional level to figure out what's going on. And then Finland sent a delegation back over to the U.S. And Joe Bonnet from USA Hockey was telling me a story last year and it's an absolute brilliant story because when Joe told the story, I was like, are you kidding me? Joe's like, yeah, I know, right? So the Finnish delegation, they go around, they're seeing all these training sessions and they're out east somewhere and they see this hockey mid-level, high level, you know, it's like 12, 13, 14 years old, but the kids are really starting to play some good hockey group. And they are talking to this coach, the trials have just finished and the coach is bragging about how he took the 20 best players out of 200 kids. And he's telling the Finnish group, we did this and we did this and we selected them on this and we did this and we got this. They said that, you know, the selection process was fantastic. It's like, well done. And one of the Finnish coaches goes, excuse me, what about the other 180? He goes, oh, I don't know. I took the 20 best. And he says, yeah, but what about the other 180? And the guy's like, who cares about the other 180? I got the 20 best. We're going to groom these kids. This is our pipeline. And the Finnish guy's like, but they're young. You left 180 possible kids for the pipeline on the table. And he's like, but I took the best 20 and they're going to groom up 3. He's like, but your pool is small. Wouldn't it be better if you had a larger pool? That is foreign to us. We cut down. We Occam's razor everything at the youngest ages. And it's like, and then everybody at the top, I was in situations where I was at clubs where like the coaches of the most elite teams are complaining about not having great quality players. And I'm like, well, one, are you helping at the lower levels or are you just putting a volunteer coach in at the very youngest age and expecting them to do that job without any support? And two, what are you doing to keep them in the system longer so you got a larger pool to choose from?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. We're seeing it now. We're seeing it pop up not just in hockey, but it was at Denmark recently in soccer. They don't cut anybody at the younger ages. Duluth Amateur Hockey Association, we just posted an article on changing the game about this. Duluth Amateur Hockey Association said no more travel hockey at age 8 and 9 and no more cuts. They all play for their local teams and they get to play until they hit the mark on their development timelines. Because listen, I was 5'8" when I was in seventh grade. I was like the fourth tallest on my basketball team and I was one of the biggest kids on the football field. I was around quite a few great athletes. We dominated in both basketball and football. Undefeated 7th and 8th grade year in football and only 2 losses in basketball. Guess wow. what? I'm still 5'8". Do you think I'm going to dominate anymore? No. I wasn't even good enough to make the freshman basketball team 2 years later because I was only 5'8". So you kept me and cut some other kid back then who knows what he could have been. So that's where I think we cut too much. I just think we cut kids out of the system way too early in their careers and we don't give them a chance to even grow into it.
There's such a demand to know and to process and rank and treat as professionals amateurs at all levels. And it just seeps into our thinking. And I think that's kind of that story hits on it, where it's like, these are the best. We're going to rank these players as the best. And we're going to use that as a benchmark for everything else. But even up until, you know, you're in your college years, so much changes emotionally, physically, mentally. Everything changes so much that it's hard to take. There's nothing, almost nothing changes from one year, is the same from one year to the next. And, you know, I think that's a big takeaway from this discussion about tryouts. What happens one year won't necessarily happen next year, for better or for worse. And what will be the same is the fact that as a parent, it's going to be really stressful. And how do we deal with that? And, you know, how do we prepare to deal with that? So, you know, just keep in mind that what we're doing now may not happen a year from now for a number of reasons. So it's a moment in time. And I think that might be the hardest thing to swallow about this discussion. So your kid will be different.
And I'll tell you this, that's probably the last piece of the puzzle that I would say with what do you do if your kid doesn't make the team? Actually, what do you do if your kid does make the team or doesn't make the team? In other words, this goes for both of them. Keep the long game in mind. This is one season, one year. Sam Snow has put out this plea to organizations to do 2 tryouts a year because the deck should be reshuffled regularly, and I agree with him completely. Mm-hmm. I missed the boat on kids, and then midway through season, I look and I got this kid down on my silver team, and I'm coaching the gold team, and the silver is the third team, and this kid's absolute dynamite. I'm like, what is he doing down there? How did I miss him? And I go to the dad, I'm like, I'm so sorry. And dad's like, no, he had a bad tryout. You never saw him, and he needed to grow a little bit. And look at him now, and it's like, but I can't get him on my team until May. What do we do? It's December, you know? And it's like, Sam's like, let's do multiple tryouts and let's commit to these kids for longer term. Like, hey, if you're going to be a part of our club, you're going to be here for 2 years so that we can develop you and give you a good opportunity and not just discard you after a season, that type of thing. Play the long game, parents. Your kid doesn't make the team. It's okay. She's 8. It's a long, long, long career. Your kid makes the team. Hey, look. She's just 8. It's a long, long, long career. If you start playing the long game and you start looking beyond the game, what really matters is not what's happening on the field. It's not what they do now. It's the person they become in the future. Then the tryouts are a lot less stressing.
Yeah. And to bring it up to a higher level, with the changes that U.S. Soccer is bringing into youth development, you know, the reshuffling of what is an age group and things like that, I think we're going to see a lot more of this. I think we're going to see different generations of kids that are either being moved up too quickly or moved, you know, or aren't being moved up quick enough just because we're now treating the different age groups differently. So I think that'll be an interesting long range study as to what our youth system looks like based on changing from a school year to a calendar year. So, well, Coach, this has been a very good discussion for a good first episode. Can you tell the audience where they can reach you if they want to give you any feedback?
Oh, sure. If you want to say something nice, here's my – and if you don't, I'll give you 2 different now. Real simple. I'm as you probably know, I'm Chief Content Officer and Lead Presenter for Changing the Game Project. So you can find us on Facebook, Changing the Game Project. I have a book coming out, so I have my own Facebook page for that. It's Echoes Beyond the Game. But honestly, if you really want to get the great stuff, you go to Changing the Game. Personally, my Twitter is @coach_Reed. And my Instagram is @coach_Reed. I typically use the Instagram to show pictures of my life in San Diego and silly motivational quotes. Find me through those. And as people know on there, I love chatting. I'll get into a conversation with pretty much anybody, and I will listen to your side. I try my very best to set my ego aside. If you disagree with something I say, let's listen, we don't get smarter as a society unless we listen to both sides of the coin. So I'll listen to you if you listen to me, and we'll go from there. But if you really like what I'm doing, no, I'm just kidding.
There's a Venmo site that you can, or a Venmo account that you can give them if they really
exactly,
like what you're doing.
Yeah. It's to fund my coffee, you know. It's
it's an important
coffee habit.
That's an important aspect of any career is the coffee habit. So. And feel free to reach out to me. I'm on a number of different mediums, but the best way probably for this is just through Twitter. It's @RobertHayJR. If you follow me, you know that I do like to mix it up a little bit, different sports, different topics, and things like that.
Well, Coach, it's been fun, and I think this was a good first episode of the podcast. So thank you to everybody who's listening and for getting in on the ground floor of the podcast Shot Happens. We'd like to thank you and thank SoccerNation.com for hosting us. Make sure you check out SoccerNation.com's written content and subscribe to their podcast network if you haven't already done so. That way you can hear new episodes of Shot Happens and their other excellent podcasts that they put out. So with appreciation to Coach Reed, this is Robert Hayes saying thank you to our listeners. Make sure you give us some feedback on social media and the website. We'll talk to you next time.